Once again, we'd like to turn to 1 Samuel chapter 1. 1 Samuel chapter 1. Read verse 2. And he, that is Elkanah, had two wives. The name of the one was Hannah, the name of the other, Peninnah. And Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. Verse 6, and her, that would be Hannah's adversary, also provoked her sore, for to make her fret, because the Lord had shut up her womb. In verse 20, wherefore it came to pass, when the time was come about, after Hannah had conceived, that she bare a son, called his name Samuel, saying, because I have asked him of the Lord. Verse 27, Hannah speaking, for this child I prayed, and the Lord hath given me my portion, or my petition, which I asked of him. Chapter 2, verse 21, and the Lord visited Hannah, so that she conceived and bare three sons and two daughters. And the child Samuel grew, not physically, but spiritually, before the Lord. So he said this morning, Hannah is one of the many special women presented to us in the Word of God. We see that she's an example, an inspiration to all of God's people about how to live life. She serves as an example and an illustration of rising above the difficulties of life. She is an illustration of God doing what man cannot do. She's an illustration of God's amazing transforming power. And God still is a God of transforming power. Only God can transform lives. Only God can mend lives and put lives back together. And we need to always be mindful of that. In 1 Samuel chapter 1, Hannah first appears as a childless woman. Verse 6, the last part, but Hannah, or verse 2, Hannah had no children. And then in verse 6, the Lord had shut up her womb. And then we come to verse 20. And we see that she is the mother of Samuel. How much time transpired between Hannah had no children and Hannah gave birth to Samuel, we don't know. But I believe we can safely say it was many years based on some things that we read here in our text. And then in chapter 2, verse 21, we see that she, besides Samuel, the Lord blessed her with three sons and two daughters. The account of Hannah is very instructive for those who need a miracle in their lives. What we read here is very instructive. And don't we all need miracles in our life? And she is very instructive for those who are brokenhearted in suffering adversity. And we want to speak tonight on from barrenness to blessedness. And we want to focus upon the brokenness of Hannah, how she suffered adversity. She suffered greatly. Hannah's first thing we'll do is look at Hannah's burden. Look at her trial. The chapter opens again, verses 1 and 2. We're introduced to Elkanah. He has two wives. Polygamy was very common in Bible days. It was never approved of God. It was against God's divine order. But it was very popular, very common. He had two wives, Hannah, Peninnah. And we are told here in chapter 1 of the plight of Hannah. Hannah had no children. And as we said this morning, that sets the stage for this entire chapter. In verses 2 through verse 16, Hannah is seen in great trial, great difficulty. She's suffering great affliction. She's a woman of sorrowful heart. She is presented to us as one who is greatly distressed. She's presented to us as one who is brokenhearted. Her burden and her trial come primarily from two sources. First and foremost, a barren womb. That is the source of her trial. Again, Hannah had no children. It does not tell us for how long this was true of Hannah, but I believe it was long enough for Peninnah to have sons and daughters. Verse 2, we read that Peninnah had children. If you go down to verse 4, you see that she had sons and daughters. For Hannah, month after month after month, and I believe year after year, Hannah had no children. Sharon and I can, in some way, identify with Hannah. We were 9 years, thereabouts, before Ben was born. We wanted children. And it is a trial. For those who want a child, and for whatever reason do not have one, that is a trial. That is a difficulty. Time and time again, Hannah's hopes were raised and then crushed. And that is how it was. You get your hopes up, maybe this time. And then there's the disappointment. And it's very real. It's very, very real. For Hannah, there was the persistent ache of no children. Hannah had no children. Again, in the Old Testament, infertility was considered a curse, was considered a judgment from God. In Old Testament days, it was a mark of shame, mark of disgrace. In the Old Testament, a barren womb marked a woman of that she was a failure. Again, verse 2, Elkanah had two wives. The name of the one was Hannah. The name of the other, Peninnah. And Peninnah had children, that is, by Elkanah. And Hannah had no children. So notice those, that phrase, Peninnah had children, married to the same man. Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. This was a great trial for Hannah. This trial is intensified in several ways in Hannah's life. Number one, it's intensified by her husband's name, Elkanah. Elkanah means God has created. The meanings of name were very significant in Old Testament days. We already saw this morning that Hannah meant grace or God's favor. But Elkanah, her husband, that name means God has created. So Hannah is the wife of a man whose very name implies that life is the miracle of God. And life is the miracle of creation. And she's married to this man whose name means God has created. And she is not able to bear children unto him. This, no doubt, would make her feel very inadequate. In all the despair and the distress that she must have felt. Again, verse 2, and Elkanah had two wives. The name of the one was Hannah. The name of the other, Peninnah. But Hannah had no children. Another way this is intensified is because of the way that is phrased. Hannah is mentioned first. And then from what we read in verses 4 and 5, particularly, verse 4, and when the time that Elkanah offered, he gave Peninnah his wife and all her sons and daughters portions, but unto Hannah he gave a worthy portion or a double portion. He gave her a double portion, for he loved Hannah. Never does it say, you read the whole thing, and never does it say that he loved Peninnah. I'm not saying he didn't, but it never says he does. But it does say that he loved Hannah. He loved Hannah. I believe that we can safely assume, or I can say that it's very likely, that Hannah was his first wife, and Peninnah was his second wife. If such was the case, the rejection, the sorrow, the heartache, the agony, the affliction, the hurt, the offense that this would cause Hannah. Perhaps he married Peninnah because he realized he couldn't have children by Hannah. So he took upon himself this second wife. We don't know. But it's very likely. You can only imagine what that would do to Hannah. Also intensifying Hannah's trial, we are told in verse 2, Peninnah had children. Verse 4, she had sons and daughters. So Hannah's, and they're all in the same house, Hannah's burden and sorrow were made worse by the fact that Peninnah birthed children, which only emphasized Hannah's barrenness or infertility. Hannah could watch those children. She could see those children. She could see those children playing. She could see the way Peninnah interacted with her children. And all this would do would increase the longing and ache for children. And again, I'll use Sharon and I as an example. We were happy when friends or family had a child. But in that happiness, there was also sorrow, because you're reminded, we, for whatever reason, we can't at this time. So you, this intensifies, and people will say, well, you shouldn't feel that way. Well, maybe not, but that's reality. That's the way it is. You should just be happy for them. We were. But that does, it intensifies your own longing. And so I can only imagine how Hannah felt as she watched Peninnah's children being raised by Peninnah and Hannah's husband. You can only imagine the trial and the sorrow that she's feeling. The distress. You can be sure of this. There was a heavy, heavy cloud that darkened that home. You have a man, and you have his two wives. You have a woman who can't have children, and you have another woman who has sons and daughters. There was a dark cloud that hung over that home. And the reason being is because, first of all, God's order was gone against. That'll cause a dark cloud. No doubt Hannah's heart was broken over her home situation as she watched Peninnah and her children in her home. Do you think that's what Hannah envisioned when she married Elkanah? I don't think so. We do not know how long Hannah endured the trial and the difficulty. But to Hannah, it seemed unending. It seemed unending. And it wasn't getting any better. And it wasn't getting any easier. You know, people will say a lot of ignorant things. They'll say, well, you go through a trial long enough, it gets easier. Who told you that? And some might say of Hannah, well, it just gets easier. No, it doesn't. It gets harder. Her life seemed to be going nowhere. And the fact that God was blessing this Peninnah with children only made it feel that much more so. And adding to her affliction of no children was the family annual journeys to the house of God. These were supposed to be special times when they would journey to the house of the Lord. In verse 3, we are told of one of these annual journeys. We see that this man, Elkanah, went up out of his city yearly to worship and to sacrifice unto the Lord of hosts in Shiloh. And we see that he takes with him Hannah, Peninnah, and Peninnah's children. Verse 4. And when the time was that Elkanah offered, so they've arrived in Shiloh for one of the annual feasts, Elkanah gave to Peninnah his wife and to all her sons and daughters portions. Can you imagine making this journey? There's Hannah, no children. There's Elkanah, her husband. And there is wife number two, if you will, with her sons and her daughters. This was supposed to be a happy occasion. But I guarantee you it was anything but for Hannah. In verse 5, but unto Hannah he gave a worthy portion, or a double portion, for he loved Hannah. for he loved Hannah. So here was a happy time, what was supposed to be a happy time. But it was just more difficult. It just made things more difficult for Hannah. Mother's Day and Father's Day were very difficult for Sharon and I for those years. It's just a reminder. Just a reminder. Should be a happy occasion. But it was just a reminder. And I believe that's how it was with Hannah. We read in verse 7 that they made this journey year by year. We don't know how many years Hannah endured, and that's what she did. She endured it, this annual pilgrimage. But Hannah had no children, and we're told why. Verse 5, because the Lord had shut up her womb. And then that's repeated again in verse 6. The Lord shut up her womb. So Hannah had no children. That was a great trial in her life. And we're told why. The Lord. The Lord sent this trial. It was the Lord who shut up her womb. So her heart is breaking because of barrenness, infertility. And it was of God. And I believe the reason the Lord shut up her womb was to show Hannah, remember her name, Grace, God's favor, to show Hannah his amazing grace and to bring her near to God. That's very comforting. God's in control. And God sends trials into our lives. God permits trials to come into our lives. Not to destroy us. God wanted to destroy us. He wouldn't have to send a trial to do it. But to draw us closer to Him. So part of her trial, the main part, was the root part, was a barren womb. But then there was ridicule from Peninnah. We're told in verse 6, and, that is, in addition to her womb being barren, her adversary, which is Peninnah, also provoked her. That is, she irritated her, she insulted her, she annoyed her sore. That is, in a very hurtful way. And she did this with an intent to make her fret. You know, it's downright evil for somebody to do something to someone to make them miserable. And that's what Peninnah was doing to Hannah. She did these things to make her fret, to make her agonize, to make her grieve, to make her life miserable. Her life was already miserable. But Peninnah wanted to make it more miserable. And the reason she provoked her was because the Lord had shut up her womb. Peninnah ridiculed, derided, mocked, taunted Hannah for her infertility. That just added to the hurt of Hannah. We didn't have a Peninnah in our life, but I will say, people said a lot of ignorant things. Preachers included, church members, family members, the list goes on and on. I can remember thinking, I can't believe they said that. I would tell you some of it, I'm not going to. But Peninnah ridiculed, derided, mocked, taunted Hannah because she had no children. The words provoked her means that she thundered against her. She thundered accusations against her. Why? Because she could have no children. Because the Lord had shut up her womb. We read in verse 7 that year by year, they made this journey to Shiloh. And then you read a little further, so she provoked her. So during that happy time, Peninnah, there she is provoking Hannah. Just making her life more miserable. She was continually taunted by Peninnah. Hannah continually heard the hateful and judgmental comments. And oh, there were plenty of them. Judgmental comments and insinuations. Hannah was a woman with many heavy afflictions. In addition to the grief and agony of a barren womb, there was provocation, there was cruelty, there was ridicule, and all this was just a part of her everyday life. Hannah had a great trial in her life. So you look at Hannah, you see a woman who had a great emptiness in her life. She has a deep void. And all of this was aggravated by several factors. It was aggravated by an enemy. The emptiness and the void that Hannah was experiencing and the jealousy and the cruelty of the rival wife, we'll call her, greatly embittered Hannah's life. So let's look at the effect that all of this had upon Hannah. In verses 3 through 7, Elkanah, Hannah, Peninnah, and her children are at this sacred feast, this annual feast of the Lord, in Shiloh. And we read concerning Hannah, she wept and did not eat. She wept and did not eat. Overwhelmed with grief, what should have been what was meant to be a happy occasion, she had no inclination to eat on this festival occasion. And she probably did not see herself fit to partake of that sacred food. In verse 8, her husband Elkanah tries to console her, but she could not be consoled by man. Verse 8, there's some lessons here for men. Then said Elkanah, her husband, to her, Hannah, why weepest thou? Now, he didn't ask that question to, really what he's saying is, Hannah, you shouldn't be weeping, because he goes on to say, why eatest thou not? Why is thy heart grieved? Am I not better to thee than 10 sons? Oh, that's not smart. What he's saying is, Hannah, you shouldn't be crying. You have no reason. Don't tell a woman that. Don't tell a woman she shouldn't be crying. Oh, maybe she shouldn't, but I would advise you not to tell her that. He's telling her it's not that bad. It's not as bad as you think. I wouldn't tell her that. But Hannah, we see she's... her heart is grieved. Why is thy heart grieved? He says to her. Why is thy heart grieved? And Hannah rose up, verse 9. And she went to the house of the Lord. There's some lessons here. I've used these and I've referred to these to many people. Will say, well, I'm not in the house of God, I'm just so depressed. Oh, read this. Notice the condition in which Hannah rose up and went into the house of the Lord. Verse 10, it says she was in bitterness of soul. She was in an irreconcilable state. Verse 10 also says she wept sore. That is, severely and painfully. It's used to express the extent and depth of her weeping. In verse 11, she mentions her afflictions to the Lord. Her calamity, her hardship, her misery, her pain, her torment, her woe. And where is she? The house of the Lord. Don't let your calamity and your misery keep you from God's house. Also in verse 11, she says, "Remember me and not forget." The implication is she feels that he may forget her, that God may forget her. The implication is perhaps God already has cast her aside. This is the way she's feeling when she goes into the house of God to pray. In verse 15, she said to Eli, the priest who was standing there watching all of this, she says, "I am a woman of a sorrowful spirit. I am a woman of a distressing and painful spirit." But she's in the house of God. She uses the word spirit to express the depth of her sorrow. It is as if she's saying, "I can't even explain the depth of the sorrow that I feel." But where is she? She's in the house of God. She's in the house of God. In verse 16, she says to Eli, "For out of the abundance of my complaint and my grief, have I spoken hitherto." Now there's three key words there that express what Hannah was feeling. Abundance. That means overflow. It is used to describe, first, complaint. What is a complaint? It's an objection. Who does she have a complaint against? She's talking to God. She's bringing her complaint, she's bringing her objection to God. But it's an abundance of complaint. The implication is she is greatly troubled. She is greatly annoyed. If someone is complaining, they are annoyed. They are aggravated. She has an abundance of complaint. She's greatly troubled, annoyed, aggravated. If you complain, something is irritating you. She's irritated. She's perplexed. Complaining shows dissatisfaction. She's dissatisfied. And again, this is all in abundance. This is what she's feeling. And then there's the word grief. Agony. Anguish. Bereavement. Despair. Gloom. Heartache. Misery. Sadness. Sorrow. Worry. And again, this is in abundance. So I believe we can safely say that Hannah was a woman who is broken. She is trapped. She went to the house of the Lord in that condition. Someone will say, "Well, not going to go to the house of the Lord if I'm not in a right condition. Well, then you probably won't hardly ever be here. Look at the condition of Hannah. And she rose up that day and went to the house of the Lord. When you feel what Hannah was feeling, the worst thing you can do is forsake the assembling of yourself. Never ever let your feelings keep you from the house of the Lord. Do what Hannah did. She's weeping at that table. She gets up from that table and she heads to the house of God. You pick up yourself and you go to the house of the Lord. That's your only hope. Then notice the resolution of her problem. The transition begins in verse 9. So Hannah rose up. Remember, she's sitting there weeping. She cannot eat. There's Peninnah, the rival wife, and her sons and her daughters. And she's overcome with sorrow. And she gets up. And she goes to the house of the Lord. You say, well, how do you know that? Well, now Eli the priest sat upon a seat by the post of the temple of the Lord. And that's where she went. And she was in bitterness of soul. But the point is, in verse 9, that's where our transition begins. She's now moving toward the Lord. She's feeling all of these things. None of her feelings have changed. But she's moving toward the Lord. You can have all of those feelings. If you move away from the Lord, I promise you those feelings will increase. Hannah moves toward the Lord. She enters God's house with all of these feelings. So she enters the Lord's house and she's broken. She's tormented. She's oppressed. She's anxious. She's dejected. She's defeated. She's grief-stricken. She's unhappy. She's disappointed. She's exasperated. She's annoyed. She's annoyed with Peninnah. She's annoyed with Peninnah's children. She's annoyed with Elkanah. She's annoyed with her life. She is greatly perplexed. That's her condition. Remember that, because we come to verse 10 and we read, she prayed unto the Lord. She prayed unto the Lord. Oh, we can get to feeling pretty bad. And we can have heavy, 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 heavy burdens and trials. And there doesn't seem to be any end. But never, ever let your feelings get in the way of praying. She prayed unto the Lord. So what's she doing? She's now expressing her thoughts and feelings to the Lord. She's no longer speculating. She's praying unto the Lord. In verse 11, we have record of her prayer. O Lord of hosts, if thou wilt indeed look on the infliction of thine handmaid. There's an implication there. She's implying that the Lord's not even paying attention to her. You feel that way sometimes. Don't lie. Sometimes you feel like God has forsaken you. She says, if you just pay attention to me, Lord, and remember me. The implication is that He's forgotten her. And not forget thine handmaid, but will give unto thine handmaid a man child. And then she made her vow, I'll give him unto the Lord. So she's praying. But remember her condition while she's praying. I've heard people say you've got to get right with the Lord in order to pray. Well, I don't know that you can get right with God without praying. So Hannah is in this terrible state, and she prayed. When you get in such a state, that's what you need to do. Verse 12, she continued praying before the Lord. That's what you need to do. You keep on praying. So I've been praying for weeks. Keep on. I've been praying for months. Keep on. I've been praying for years. Keep on. Keep on. Notice, she continued, verse 12, she continued praying before the Lord. Before the Lord. So she's now in a position. In spite of all of her other emotions, she's in a position where she can feel the presence of God. She's before the Lord. She can see the Lord. She can hear the Lord. She can receive from the Lord. She's now near to God. Still feeling the same way, but she's close to God. That's where communion and experience with God is found. Near to God. Near to God is where we experience a closer relationship with God. Near to God is where holiness is developed. Near to God is where spiritual understanding is developed. For Hannah to sit down and try to figure this mess out, her husband has married another woman, has children by this woman. For Hannah to try to figure all of this out, there's no figuring it. She's never going to have peace trying to figure this out. So she just gets near to God. That's where faith is strengthened also. Faith is not strengthened by speculating. Faith is not strengthened by trying to figure it out. Faith is strengthened near to God. Near to God, that's where you find enablement. Near to God is where you find peace. Near to God is where we can finally live above the world and find a higher plane of living. Near to God is where the heart will eventually be filled with gratitude and praise and passion and worship. So look at Hannah. Feeling all these things that we've already described and see her there before the Lord. And in verse 13 and 14, Eli sees her. He takes notice of her because her lips are moving, but there are no words. And he assumes that she's drunk and begins to rebuke Hannah. Hannah in verse 15 assures him that she's not drunk, but says unto him, I have poured out my soul before the Lord. When you feel like Hannah did, pour out your soul before the Lord. In verse 17, Eli said to Hannah, go in peace. Go in peace. And the God of Israel, grant thee thy petition as thou hast asked of him. He says, Hannah, I give you assurance that the Lord is going to bless you with a son. Remember the condition that Hannah entered the house of the Lord. And in verse 18, Hannah went her way. And did eat. And her countenance was no more sad. Where did that happen? Well, it happened in the house of the Lord. But more importantly, it happened before the Lord. In His presence. It was before the Lord that she received this assurance. It was before the Lord that her faith was strengthened. And Hannah left with peace. You see, at that moment, Hannah was healed inwardly. Only God can heal inward wounds. No one else can. No one else can. And don't pretend that you can. You can't. You can't heal inward wounds. Only God can do that. It was there before the Lord that her spirit was renewed. She went from the house of the Lord that day believing that God would grant her request in His time. And that was good enough. And she was determined. With that assurance, she was determined, I'll wait upon Him. I'll just wait upon God. So you see, it was there in the Lord's house, before the Lord, that she received what we all need, patient faith. Patient faith. She has the assurance God will answer. But it'll be in His time. And she received patient faith. She believed it. And she said, I'll wait. I'll just wait for God to work. Hannah was healed. And then in verse 19, Elkanah, Hannah, Peninnah, and the children returned home. Now think about it. The circumstances have not changed. The situation has not changed. But Hannah's different. Hannah's different. And it's not the circumstances. It's not the situation that is the emphasis. It's us. Yes, we want circumstances to change many times. We want situations to change, and we plead for that. But really, what we need most is we need to be changed. And Hannah was changed. She was different. She was a different woman. She now has a sense of relief. Same circumstances. But she has a sense of rest and security and contentment. She has confidence. She has a sense that all is well. Everything's going to be okay. And the transition was verses 9 and 10. When she rose up, went to the house of the Lord. And then in verse 20, she conceived and bare a son. Bare a son. And oh, what joy. We don't know how long that took. She returned home. She conceived. We assume that it was almost immediately, but not necessarily. It might have been several more years. We don't know. But she conceived and bare a son. And she called his name Samuel. The Lord hath heard. The Lord hath heard. And then we see her back in the house of the Lord. Verse 26. And there's Eli again. And she said to Eli, I'm the woman. This would be another year, by the way. I'm the woman that stood by thee here praying unto the Lord. I'm the one who prayed for this child, and now I'm here to give him to God. I'm here to give the child to the Lord. And then, chapter 2, verse 20, Well, let's read verse 19. Moreover, his mother made him a little coat. Remember, she left him at the house of God and brought it to him from year to year when she came up with her husband to offer the yearly sacrifice. And then we see she gave birth eventually to three sons and two daughters. And Samuel continued to grow spiritually before the Lord. You may be able to identify with Hannah in her barrenness and trial. We all can at some point in our life. Barrenness and trial isn't limited to, this barrenness is not limited to a barren womb. Barrenness and trial may come in the form of the physical. It may come in the form of the emotional. It may come in the form of the mental. It may come in the form of the spiritual. It may come in all forms at once. But know this, there is transformation found, moving toward God, positioning ourselves before the Lord. God can. God can. We can't. Elkanah, though he tried to comfort his wife, he couldn't fix it. It was beyond, he couldn't fix it. The Lord had closed her womb. The only one who could open that womb was God. And so it is today. We need to realize, I can't, so-and-so can't, but God can. And pray that God give us patient faith. And in the meantime, just do what's right. Do what God would have you to do. Your situation, your circumstance may never change. I can't promise you that it will. I know there's a lot of TV preachers who you just give your life to God and everything will be just fine. That's foreign to God's word. I can't promise you that your circumstances will get better. They may get worse. You say, well, they can't get worse. Oh, yes, they can. Oh, yes, they can. Your situation may not get better. It may get worse. But know this, your only hope is God. He's your only hope. He's your only source. Don't quit on God. You'll destroy your life. Hannah, I could go on for several more hours talking about Hannah. What a wonderful, so many lessons in this. Realize that you can't fix people. You can't fix them. God can. Don't tell them they shouldn't feel that way. They feel that way. You can't just turn a switch and, okay, I feel differently now. Okay, I think differently now. It doesn't work that way. You tell somebody, well, stop thinking that. Well, try that sometime. It doesn't work. God is the remedy. God is the answer. And that's true regarding everything. So when we get to feeling like Hannah, for whatever reason, you have complaints. Someone may say, well, we shouldn't complain. You're right, we shouldn't, but we do. We shouldn't be dissatisfied. You're right, but we are. What do? Pretend that we don't have complaints? Pretend that we are perfectly content when we're not? Do what Hannah did. Tell the Lord. Well, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't tell the Lord, Mike. He already knows. Tell the Lord. Tell Him everything you're thinking. There's healing in that. There's healing. You can tell me, you can tell 100 other people, all your thoughts, all your feelings. But no one can fix them. But there's one who can. You need to tell Him. That doesn't mean that you can't ever tell other people. But I'm telling you the solution. The solution is tell God. Amen. You can come to me and tell me your complaints. Tell me how you're feeling. Tell me how you're distressed in your trials and your burdens. And I'll listen. And then I'll take it to God in prayer. But know this, telling me won't fix it. Tell Him. Tell Him. What a wonderful example. Don't let your feelings keep you from God's house. Don't let the feelings keep you from prayer. Don't let that happen. Hannah went into the house of the Lord in terrible shape. Terrible shape. Haven't we all done that? Come to the house of God in terrible shape. But God can do the miraculous. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us verse song.